Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Ben Brock Johnson, and this is On Point. Triptychs, folding maps, endless games of I Spy, sing-alongs, and backseat sibling rivalries. Yep, we're talking about the great American family road trip ever since the mid-20th century when the interstate highway system enabled families to more easily pack up the wood-paneled station wagon and hit the road. Americans have been crisscrossing the nation in search of adventure, fun, and bizarre roadside attractions. These days, though, our vehicles have built-in navigational devices, and every passenger has their own smartphone, maybe virtual reality. Okay, probably not. The cross-country tradition is alive and well, though. This hour, On Point, family road trips. You can join us on air or online. Do you and your family regularly take road trips? Where do you go? Tell us about your experience. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Milwaukee is Rich Ratay, author of the new book, Don't Make Me Pull Over, An Informal History of the Family Road Trip. You can find an excerpt at our website, onpointradio.org. Rich, thanks for chatting with us.
Thank you for having me on, Ben. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So you got to tell me, did you come up with the idea to write the book while you were in a car?
Not actually in a car, but I know this is going to shock you, Ben. The idea for writing a book about family vacations actually came to me while on a family vacation. Now, my dirty little secret is that time it wasn't a road trip. We'd actually flown to that particular destination. But okay. I was sitting in a beach chair and I looked over at my sons who were 8 and 6 years old at the time. And I got to thinking and remembering back to when I was their age and traveling the highways of the 1970s with my own siblings and parents and just kind of putting myself back in their shoes. And it occurred to me how profoundly those family road trips that we took together really affected me. I mean, they gave me some of my fondest childhood memories. They broadened my horizons at that age in so many ways. And I think they really affected and shaped my relationships with my parents and with my siblings for a lifetime. But it also occurred to me how little I really knew about how that road trip experience came to be. I had next to no idea about how America got its interstate highways, how we got things like CB radios and 8-track tape decks and cruise control and why our family station wagon had fake wood paneling on the side. You know, these are things that they don't teach you about in any kind of high school history courses or college history courses.
Sure.
And so when I got back from that family vacation, I just I went to the library and I spent like months on end doing the research for this book. And it was like falling down into a rabbit hole because I would just stumble across one fascinating story after another about the entrepreneurs who kind of created American car culture and just the events that kind of came into play in creating the family road trip experience. And I just found it absolutely fascinating. And I knew I had the stuff to write a book. And so I sat down to write a book.
Fair enough. Well, I can imagine you shaking your fist at your kids from your beach chair saying, when I was your age, et cetera, et cetera. But I'll admit to you, I told a friend yesterday in preparation for this conversation that everything I knew about the highway system originally was from the movie Who Framed Roger Rabbit, where there's like a plot point that they're going to like pave through Toontown to create the Great American Highway. So
right,
this is a fascinating topic. Tell me a little bit first, if you would, just about your family history and about your dad. Your dad plays a role in the book, a pretty big role in the book. The first part of the book, you describe basically waking up in a snowdrift after getting into a fender bender on an early morning road trip.
Yeah.
And the reason you're on this trip, of course, is your dad. Tell me about the role that he played in your own family's road trip history.
Yeah, well, there's six people in my family. When I was growing up, I was the youngest of four kids. It was fine. It was actually a kind of an exercise in discovery in writing this book, how much my dad really was the central role in our family vacations, because really the main point of our vacations was to get my father out of the Wisconsin winter and down south to a sunny, warm golf course as quickly as possible. So we always made a beeline south. We rarely traveled west of the Mississippi River. And kind of a fun experience in that opening chapter
sure.
on one of our family vacations. we would always get a very early start, first of all,
sure.
Because we lived north of Chicago. So one of my dad's strategies for beating all the traffic jams around Chicago was to get up super early in the morning. We would typically leave about 3 a.m. And try to get through Chicago before, you know, the morning rush.
Classic dad move. For sure.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay, so he's strategizing about how to get through Chicago.
Oh yeah, and he would have the car packed up the night before and and come, 2:30 in the morning, he would march through the house like a drill sergeant, turning on all of our lights and, beating pans with a wooden spoon and trying to rouse us from sleep and get us out to the car.
Sure.
And of course, me being the youngest, he would just come into my bedroom and scoop me up and throw me into the back seat where I'd lay across the laps of my older brothers. And we'd be off on our way in a cloud of leaded gas fumes.
Sure.
So and then on that particular morning, we found ourselves in a snow squall in a remote section of Indiana, and we hit a stretch of black ice on the highway. Every car on the highway spun out, from what my brother told me, and we were very fortunate that we just kind of found our way into a ditch, and then years later, we agreed that was basically the best start to a family road trip ever.
Sure. I like one of my favorite moves, at least as a kid and on a road trip, is like pretending you're asleep. So the parent has to bring you into the car or take you out of the car and carry you.
Yeah.
That was always a good move. So I want to talk a little bit about just briefly this sort of first engineered road that you talk about in the book from Lancaster to Philly in Pennsylvania. Can you tell us about this road?
Yeah, well, it was called the National Highway. It was made possible by an act of Congress called the Enabling Act, which also created the state of Ohio. And they figured, as long as we're going to create a state of Ohio, we want a way for people to get there as well. So it was the first act that really made possible public funding for an improved road. And when we call it a paved road, it was actually not paved in the sense that we think of it today. It was basically they dug a small trench. I think it was up to 30 feet wide and about 18 inches deep, and filled it up with crushed rock. But it was enough of an improvement to make possible greater wagon and horse traffic headed west. And it really became the early gateway to the west for many travelers from the East Coast.
Mm. I think I'd like to hear from a caller, actually, right now, just because we're already getting, of course, some people weighing in for us on this topic, because we all have memories of this thing. I want to go to William from Havre de Grace, Maryland. I think that's how you say that. Maybe, William, you can correct me. But William, thanks for calling On Point. What's your comment here?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Yeah, and it's Havre de Grace.
Have the grace.
A couple comments.
All right.
Yeah. A couple comments. I love road trips. I always have been taking road trips. I'm 41. Been doing so since I can remember, from Denver to Geneva, Illinois, outside of Chicago. But we would have the very basic cars, no air conditioning. So my first earliest memories were having to take and tape them to the windows so we could keep the sun out.
Sort of like sun blockers, taping sun blockers to the window so you could keep the sun out. Is that right?
That's right. And because we were traveling through the cornfields of America, we had to keep ourselves occupied. So we'd do the ABC game, where you find a letter on a license plate or a billboard.
Oh, yeah.
Or we'd play the name of a town. If it started with A, you had to find another. If it ended with A, you had to find another town that started with A. Or countries, or rivers, geographical spots.
Fair enough. William, thank you so much for those memories. That's great. Sounds rich, like William and you had similar experiences in that part of the country growing up with road trips.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was always just my brothers and I in the backseat. My brothers were 8 years and 7 years older than me. So they kind of dominated the space of the backseat. There was seldom room for me on the backseat as those two kind of fought out over their own territory back there. So I'd be the one always crawling up on the rear window shelf of my dad's old land yacht.
Sounds safe. Sounds very safe.
Yeah, exactly. It was a different era, wasn't it? Or, you know, during the few family road trips when we had station wagons, I'd crawl back into the way back and either sit in that rear-facing, nausea-inducing seat in the back of those classic station wagons.
You're talking the way back?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Remember,
love
they,
the
they
way,
would have
way back.
Secret compartments back there.
So good.
Where the seat would pop up and you'd either be facing the rear, or we also had a station wagon that had two seats facing each other sideways along the length of the car. And it didn't matter. Whichever arrangement that was sure to stir up a little, stomach difficulties.
I loved the way back facing out of the back because it was like I always played with one of my best friends. We'd always play that game where you pretend like you're a starfighter or something like that and all the cars following you or like bad guys. And that was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. And I would always have my stash of candy back there because over the years, I learned from my dad that he wasn't going to always make stops when we wanted to get things to eat. So I would have a stash of candy, and I'd have some candy cigarettes in my mouth, and you should have seen some of the looks that I got from people passing us by on the highway, seeing an 8-year-old with what looked like a Lucky Strike sticking out of his mouth.
Candy stash is clutch. Stick with us, Rich. We're going to talk more. We're discussing the Great American Road Trip, its history, its customs, and the economy of motels, fast food, restaurants, and roadside attractions that grew up alongside it. And this is Lindsey Buckingham with Holiday Road, the theme song from the classic road trip movie National Lampoon's Vacation. I'm Ben Brock Johnson. This is On Point.
Planet Money tip number 17. Sometimes life is exactly like the movies.
T-minus 30 seconds.
They said T-minus. They said T-minus.
Planet Money, a podcast about the economy and sometimes about rocket ships.
This is On Point. I'm Ben Brock Johnson. We're discussing one of America's favorite family pastimes, the road trip. You can join the conversation. Did your family have any road trip traditions? Tell us about the strangest thing you've seen along the highway. Are you battling with the kids to put down the screens and look out the window? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Tweet your favorite road trip songs to us. We will read them out later in the hour. My guest today is Rich Ratay, author of the new book, Don't Make Me Pull Over, an informal history of the family road trip. We'll talk more about the rise in road trip culture and how it fundamentally reshaped America. But first, I want to actually read some listener comments from online and then get joined here by a surprise guest who's on the road on their own road trip. I just want to read these online comments from our website. Mike L. says, road trips aren't the same on your own. As dorky as it may seem, I've always wanted to be the Clark of a Griswold family vacation. We were just playing music from that, and he put in hashtag Wally World Forever. Pretty good. Thanks for that, Mike. Also, Mark V1188 writes, the nostalgia around the family road trip dates from a period of time before air travel became affordable and a normal activity for most people. Plus, the interstate highway system was brand new and connected all parts of the country together, taking people on interesting drives through many lovely places, not the 8-lane expressways of today. And speaking of interesting drives through beautiful places and perhaps 8-lane expressways of today, I want to bring onto the phone with us, joining us from the highway in Ohio is On Point's fellow guest host of On Point, very own Jane Clayson. Jane and her family are currently road tripping in an RV. Jane, thanks for calling in from the road.
Hey, Ben, nice to talk with you. Nice to be on the other side of that microphone.
I'm sure. So talk to me. How's morale? And, what's going on?
Morale is good. Good so far. We're 3 days in, so we've got 7 days left.
Okay.
Ask us in a week. We'll let you know at that point. But so we left Kirtland, Ohio this morning. We drove about an hour and a half.
Okay.
We just arrived at an amusement park that somebody told us about yesterday. That the kids were excited to go to on the shores of Lake Erie. So
okay.
We'll be here for a few hours. We do some form of road tripping every summer, but this year is the quintessential family road trip because we wanted to bring my parents with us. So we rented a camper. We rented this little RV, which drives like a U-Haul and otherwise has turned out to be really fun. So my dad's the navigator. My husband and I take turns driving. We've got a 12 and a 13-year-old who've been instructed to get off their electronics. And now, Ben, we're just letting the magic happen. You know?
I saw a photo of the RV and your kids in the top window of the RV.
Yes.
Did the whole family sleep in the RV last night?
Sleeping in the camper. My parents get the mattress in the back. We get the pull-out futon, the little cushions in the cab, and then the kids sleep up in the hatch above the driver's seat. We do have a tent.
Okay.
We have a tent. If we find a good campground along the way, it is very unlikely that I will be in the tent, but it frees up some space in our camper. We usually have a rough itinerary of where we want to go.
Sure.
But we really try to be very flexible. So this trip where we wanted to see the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which we did.
Okay.
That was great. The Lincoln Library Museum in Springfield, Illinois.
Okay.
Some other historical sites. We're going to head back through Amish country in Millersburg, Ohio. We're going to end this odyssey at Niagara Falls.
Okay. I was going to say, it sounds like a pretty flat road trip, but Niagara Falls is a good place to end, I suppose.
Exactly. Well, but the most important things along the way, honestly, are the arts festivals and the music festivals and the farm stands and the diners.
Mm.
We just kind of let the trip take us where we'll go. We have no schedule, no appointment, and now no motel reservations to worry about, right?
Fair enough. How does it smell in the RV so far?
It's good.
All right.
Totally transparent. There is a little hole where there is a toilet, and we all plug our nose when we open the door. But
fair.
That's helpful along the road here on our trip.
Such is life. Rich Rite, let me just ask you, have you been in a RV road trip with your family, or was it all station wagons?
I did. Finally, 3 years ago, we rented an RV and took the classic Great American Road Trip out along I-90 through Sandy, or through South Dakota, rather, to go to Mount Rushmore.
Nice.
So, kind of that quintessential Great American road trip. And it was fantastic. And kind of like with Jane and what she's talking about, it wasn't necessarily the final destination that really made that trip. It was all the stops that we made along the way. We picked up the RV in northern Illinois and then headed west. We went to the Field of Dreams shooting location where they shot the movie. That baseball field is still preserved.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a magical place. And then we went further west a few more hours to Clear Lake, Iowa, and stopped off at the Surf Ballroom, which was the last venue that Buddy Holly and Big Bopper and Richie Valens played before boarding that fateful airplane and crashing into a nearby cornfield. And the Surf Ballroom is kind of set up as a dedication to them and kind of a museum to them. And then, of course, I-90, you got the Corn Palace, you got the Badlands, you got the Minuteman Missile Historic Site, which was absolutely fascinating. And then we did all that before we even got to Mount Rushmore. So just like with Jane's experience, it's the journey along the way that makes the family road trip. It's not necessarily, where you're ultimately headed.
Fair enough.
And it's the people, Ben, really. I mean, the people that you see and that you meet in all these little places. That's what we wanted our kids to experience and what we want to experience, not just the quality family time, not just the card games and the Scrabble and the books and all that. It's the people that you meet in the diners and at the music festivals and all that. That's the fun part.
Fair.
Exactly. And that's really what broadens your horizons, especially as a child, for the, you know, experiencing what America is like in these distant places and tasting different foods and,
right.
and hearing people speak with different accents and realizing that there's a great big world out there beyond just your familiar surroundings. It really broadens kids' horizons in so many ways.
Jane, I know you're on a you know, you're literally on the road, so we don't want to keep you for too long. But another quick question for you before we let you go. Who controls the radio?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you're listening to us, but I mean, who controls the radio?
So it's a funny question because we were in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and my husband and I were, you know, traveling down memory lane, looking at all these artists and all of the people who are in that great museum. And we put together a playlist of all the great rock and roll songs that
yeah.
that we saw and heard in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So I am in charge.
Fair enough. That's good to hear. Jane, thank you so much for calling us from the road during your vacation. We really appreciate it.
Listening, Ben. See you. Good luck hosting. Take
care. All right. Thanks a lot. We'll let... Let Jane get on the road again and go back to you, Rich. Rich, I'll just share with you very briefly. I went on I won't describe most of this trip because it probably isn't fit for radio, but I went on a spring break trip with it wasn't so bad, but I went on a spring break trip with my college buddies my senior year of college.
Sure.
And you were talking about just sort of the kind of the experience of meeting different kinds of people around the country and talking to them. And we went down south to New Orleans and through Mississippi and Florida and
yes.
Back up to Connecticut where we were leaving from during our college days. And I remember we went to a farmer's market in Mississippi that was not like any farmer's market that most people in the Northeast probably think
right.
about when they think farmer's yeah. markets. We were there and really enjoyed ourselves. And there was a guy who, just running the farmer's market and someone else was departing from the farmer's market. And he said, "See you later, Toodle."
And
that became like a thing that we just said to each other for the entire rest of the road trip. You know, you also get these like weird, I feel like you get these inside jokes. We were just all saying, "See you later, Toodle," to each other.
Yeah. And those are the kinds of experience and experiences and encounters that you can only run into when you're driving through the country rather than flying over it. And that's what we really got away from, you know, in the 1980s with the rise of cheap airfares thanks to deregulation of the airlines in the late 1970s.
Sure.
Which, you know, I would argue kind of killed the family road trip, at least for several decades.
Yeah, so I want to go to some calls now because we really do have a lot of great stories coming in, I would like to talk to Misty from Kingsport, Tennessee. Misty, how are you? Thanks for calling. What's your comment?
Hey there, Ben. Thanks so much. So we just got back with our three elementary school age kiddos from a road trip to New York City. And I just wanted to say I love this concept that it's the trip itself, not necessarily the destination, that makes it so wonderful, although New York City, of course, is fabulous. We did not tell our kids where we were going, and we had clues every hour to teach them along the way about where we were going without giving it away. And they had an atlas in the back seat, and they would look, okay, what interstate are we on? Which direction are we headed? To try to guess where we were going. And it just made the time pass so much easier with fewer fights.
Sure.
And hopefully, you know, they learned some things along the way. So it was really, I think we're going to try that strategy again.
Fair enough. Sounds like a winning strategy. Misty, thank you very much for your call. And I want to hear from someone else here as well who's called in from Dayton, Ohio. Kathleen is calling. Kathleen, tell us about your road trip adventures.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Hey, I brought up three daughters where we traveled a lot from Ohio to Colorado and Michigan. But however, 4 years ago, I took my 86-year-old mother, who is now 90. She wanted to do the drive from Ohio to Colorado. She had just had a stroke. I called her neurologist, and I thought he'd say no. But I told him what we were going to do, where we were going to go, and he said, "Have a nice trip."
Mm.
Well, I had really kind of hoped that he was going to say no, but he said yes. So we took the back road.
You hoped he would say no. I love it. Sorry,
yeah,
go ahead.
And he took... He, We took back roads. I went the way she wanted. I let her choose. Mm. We only drove about 7 hours a day because of her age. And we stopped at county fairs. We stopped at museums that we, county fairs that we didn't know anybody. And we stopped at museums, and we stopped wherever she wanted. She had a fabulous time. I took her to Boulder and let her adjust to the altitude. Then I took her up to 9,500 feet, where we have an old trailer on 40 acres surrounded by national forest. And I told her, I said, Mom, you're going to have to be peeing in a pot at night because I'm not taking you out at night because there are bears and mountain lions. And so she was up for it. We had a ball, and I did it again with her 2 years ago. And I can't say enough about creating that memory with her and giving that to her at her age, at this point in her life. I also want to give a few clues. I travel so much with my daughters who are now in their 40s. One of the clues I learned about being on the road from a couple in Montana, I hate
malls.
Oh,
wow.
I would trade hiking time and stopping at historical sites with my daughters for mall time.
Fair enough. Kathleen, let me jump in, and I know that we've got some more things to talk about before the break, but that's such a wonderful, powerful story about you and your mother, and I like the idea of trading mall time for trading woods time. That's wonderful. Thank you so much for your call. Rich, I want to go back to you very quickly before we go to our break here and just ask you about another thing from history that you talk about in your book. Tell me the story of one of these early trips across the country of Horatio Jackson's $50 bet. And I also want you to talk about the dog.
Yeah, well, the first successful crossing of America by car began, as many bad ideas do, after two gentlemen had cocktails and got into a debate and made a bet. So Horatio Jackson was a 31-year-old surgeon. He was from Vermont, but vacationing out in California while recovering from a bout of tuberculosis. And he goes out drinking with a friend one night and soon finds himself in debate with another patron about whether cars are the future of transportation or just a passing fad. And Horatio Jackson, for whatever reason, argues vehemently that they are, you know, the future of transportation. And he says, in fact, cars are already so rugged and durable that he could drive one clear across the country back home to his home in Vermont. Well, this is 1903, and there's barely any roads that are built, you know, west of the Mississippi River.
Sure.
Of course, his assertion is challenged by his fellow patron. And he has to go home and explain to his wife the next morning the bet he made. Like you said, $50, the equivalent of about $1,500 in today's money.
Uh-huh.
His wife is a very smart woman. She opts to take the train home. Meanwhile, Horatio Jackson finds himself in the position of having to actually make this trip now. So he hires a great mechanic in Sewell Crocker, who recommends that he buys a 20-horsepower Winton touring car. They load up this car with all sorts of camping equipment and cooking equipment, and they set off heading north from San Francisco. They're going to follow the Oregon Trail to avoid the Rocky Mountains. But 15 miles into their trip, of course, the car flats. They have to, fix the flat. A few more hours on, they get bad directions from a woman who sends them 200 miles out of their way simply because she wants them to have to go pass by family that'll have their first chance to see an actual automobile. Along the way, they lose their cooking equipment and don't even notice because the car is so noisy. Of course, they get more flats. They have to wind up the wheels of the car with rope just to continue on. They're having their headlights are insufficient, so they have to stop off and buy a spotlight so that they can continue to travel after dark. And of course, they run out of gas. Well, they rent a bike in order to travel into the nearest town to pick up some more gas. And and the bike flats.
That's pretty amazing.
And this is all before they've even departed from the West Coast. So it was a rough start.
Fair enough.
Somewhere along the way, they picked up a stray pit bull named Bud. Their luck changes. They find the going much easier once they get across the Mississippi River, and they have actual more paved roads built in that section of the country.
Sure.
And 63 days later, they roll into Times Square, being the first to have crossed America by car.
Fair enough. Rich Ratay is going to stick with us. We're going to talk more about road trips. Here's another classic, by the way, On the Road Again by Willie Nelson. I'm Ben Brock Johnson. This is On Point.
Hey, thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Peter Sagal. Come try the only show that treats the news the way it deserves to be treated, roughly, with lots of tasteless comments. That's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on the NPR One app or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Ben Brock Johnson. We're discussing family road trips from the golden age in the 60s and 70s to the resurgence among millennials today. You can join the conversation if you could take a road trip anywhere in the country. Where would you go? What would you do and what would you see along the way? My guest today is Rich Ratay, author of the new book, Don't Make Me Pull Over, An Informal History of the Family Road Trip. But first, we'd like to check in with another family road tripping across America. Joining me from Chicago is Christina Mallow. Christina is 7 weeks into a 15-week road trip with her husband, 3 sons, and the family dog. Christina, welcome to On Point.
Hey, Ben, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on 7 weeks into 15 weeks.
Yes.
How's it going? What are you driving? And sounds like you got a packed vehicle, whatever you're driving.
Yeah, so, well, for years we drove our family minivan, our Honda Odyssey van. It's tan, and its name is Trigger, named after Roy Rogers' Golden Palomino. But we decided to upgrade this time, and we bought a motorhome, a Class C motorhome. So we've been driving around the country in Big Boy. That's what we've named him.
Big Boy. Nice.
Yeah.
Like after the, is that like a burger place? Is there a place called?
Yes. The Boys, yes. You know, we really didn't even know about that until we got out here and then we saw there's a Big Boy restaurant. So Big Boy has had his picture taken next to another Big Boy. Yes.
Very nice. Christina, talk about how this idea really came together among your family and also how you plotted your route.
Okay. So it's just something my husband and I always knew we wanted to do. We've taken road trips before, like I said, in Trigger. And so we knew that someday when the boys were of a good age, you know, 13, 10, and 9 now is what they are, that we would want to do something like this. And so we just really felt like God was saying the timing was right to do it. And so we all sat down and made a list of everywhere we would like to see in the U.S. Like just it was a dream list. Write down, don't hold anything back. Write it all down. And so we got a cork board, we got a U.S. map, and we got some pins, and we stuck the pins into those places, and we worked in as many of them as we could.
Did the dog get to put a pin in the board or no?
Well, we didn't have her at that time. Otherwise, she would have. But
no, fair enough.
She's hit so many dog parks and made so many friends along the way. Yes.
Fantastic. Rich, what do you think of that strategy for weaving a road trip together? Did you ever get that kind of agency as a kid traveling around with your family?
Did I ever get my choice of where we were headed or
exactly
where we were going to stop?
Yeah.
I had no say in the matter whatsoever.
Well, times have changed for the better, I guess. Jane, remind me how old your kids are. I'm sorry, Christina. Christina, remind me how old your kids are.
Don't worry at all. Our oldest is 13. Then we have a 10-year-old and a 9-year-old. They're all boys.
And
all joys.
Fantastic. And tell me how the, do you have opinions about screen time? Do you guys have any screens in the vehicle that that you're using on a regular basis? Do you care? Talk to me about that part of this.
I guess you would say we're Neanderthals in that department because we don't. The boys have good old-fashioned books that they love reading, and they love looking out the window, and they all take turns sitting up front with Dad while he's driving, and so they get to talk and have conversations with Dad, and our dog lays her head in their lap, and so they just get to enjoy good old-fashioned fun that way.
What's the strangest thing you've seen, Christina, on the road so far, other than Big Boy?
The strangest thing we've seen? It's been really fun being in this part of the country because we get rained on almost every single day around the same time of the day. We can almost bet on our schedule and having to work around it that way. And in Key West, the manatee mailboxes. People decorate them so fun. You know, their mailbox is actually shaped like a manatee. They're holding a mailbox. And we saw one dressed like Uncle Sam. We saw one dressed like a hula girl. It's just really fun. Everyone's personality around the country is so fun and different.
Oh, that's wonderful. Do you feel like your kids, Christina, are getting part of an education about just how diverse and interesting the U.S. is when you really get down to it?
Yes, very much so, because we've seen so many different things. You know, we took them walking through the French Quarter, and we've taken them on hikes through, you know, Blue Ridge Mountains. So it's just such a big, diverse experience. And, you know, I was asking them, you know, what are some things you've learned? And our oldest was really grateful. You know, he said, I've learned to be even more grateful for what I have and to lend a hand when we can, because we've also gotten to do that. We've gotten to share and help people out in little ways. So that's been a huge blessing. Another thing that one of our boys said is that you can make friends anywhere you go. And that's been really cool.
That's really nice.
And yeah, yes.
Christina Mala, she's joining us from the road. She's an Arizona resident on a 15-week road trip with her husband, three sons, and the family dog. Christina, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you calling in. And you can find a link to Christina's blog, Mala Walkabout, at our website, onpointradio.org. Rich, I want to circle back to you, but before I do that, I just want to read an online comment that we got on our website. This is by Poster Children. We're a punk rock band getting ready to go on another U.S. tour, and this time we're taking our kids with us in the van. We are enjoying your show. So, you know, it's also nice to learn that some people have probably a really scheduled road trip and have built their road trip around their tour, I guess. But I don't know if this punk band is made up of millennials. It sounds like maybe not. But Rich, you contend that that this is a thing that millennials are actually opting into. Can you talk more about that?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a lot of frustration, not just on behalf of millennials, but on behalf of everyone. They're just frustrated with how air travel has gotten more expensive these days. And just all the unexpected delays and cancellations and having to show up so early at the airport, you know, especially if you're checking bags. And so they're looking for alternatives. And the studies show that millennials in vast numbers are coming back to the road trip. But my worry is, you know, is the road trip really the same? Is it that same shared experience that we like to fondly recall from our days in the 1970s? I would argue that for many people, it's not. And in large part, it's because of the rise of personal electronics. You know, oftentimes, and we'll even do it sometimes on my own family road trips. I'll have one son in the back seat and he has his headphones on and he's watching, his own movie, and maybe a sister will be alongside of him texting away to her friends, complaining about how long the trip has taken. And mom will be in the front seat, maybe with her own headphones on and listening to her own audiobook. And so even though we're in the same vehicle and as close to each other physically as we ever were, we're kind of off in our own little world. So I think It's very incumbent upon us as parents to place limitations on those use of the electronic devices and in a very conscious way to make an effort to seek out places to stop, to encourage those moments of discovery that we've kind of talked about over the over this segment.
Sure.
Kind of recreate that shared family experience that made those great those road trips so great.
Well, Rich, I think I've got some good news for you, at least anecdotally here. We have another caller on the line. This is John from Stowe, Massachusetts. John, thanks for calling us. It sounds like you're on a road trip or recently just did one.
Thanks, Ben. Hi. So I just want to say sometimes it is about the goal of where you're going to, because we did an 800-mile road trip over the weekend that was many months of anticipation.
Wow.
I broke a 3-month diet to have cake at the Cake Boss's original 1910 opening Carlo's Bakery in Hoboken.
Nice.
And brought my fiance to the Maryland Zoo, where I had arranged a behind-the-scenes experience so that she could play with the African penguins there. And the anticipation of the drive to there and just the drive home was glorious.
Oh, that sounds great. John, I don't want to be too forward, but how old are you? Are you a millennial?
Fiance is a millennial, but I'm a bit older. I'm in my 40s.
Fair enough. Well, I love the idea of sometimes making it about the destination and making it about seeing penguins. I'm always in favor of that. John, thank you very much for your comment. I also would like to hear from one other caller here. Lauren is calling from Richmond, Kentucky. Lauren, what's your comment?
Hi, Ben. Earlier you were talking about traditions and rules on the road trips.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you would ever call what we did in my family road trips, but we would drive down to the beach for our summer vacation. And my mom had very strict rules about we only eat at local places and we don't do any chains. We either cook our own food or we go to local restaurants.
I like that.
It always turned out great. But there was one time when we went to the beach and we would always stop at this place. It was a fishery where the boats would literally drop off shrimp and stuff. And we picked up our, weekly allowance of seafood, and all the shrimp leaked in the old Bronco that we were driving that summer.
Oh, no.
And we had to spend the entire trip back from lower Alabama to Kentucky with all the windows open, including that back one.
That's amazing.
Rancid shrimp.
Well, Lauren, thank you so much for your call. I guess road trips are about adventure and misadventure, right, Rich?
Absolutely. Sometimes I think it's the fights and the squabbles that you have along the way and the negotiations and the compromises you have to strike with each other that really make that road trip a shared experience and what makes them so memorable.
Yeah, and you we've touched on this a little bit over this hour, but you really do feel like there is a deeper importance of road trips. And it was interesting to hear the caller talk about traveling with her mother after her mother had a stroke. I suppose it does really sort of make some time for, not just sort of light time with the family, but maybe some deeper conversations as well.
Oh, absolutely. I've often compared the experience to soldiers sharing a foxhole under fire, right? They say nothing brings soldiers together like being in that foxhole under fire. And I think it's kind of the same way when you're all kind of squished together in a small compartment, traveling along America's highways and encountering things that you can only encounter while making that drive and having that time where you have no choice but to talk to each other and get into some of those deeper discussions that you wouldn't ordinarily be able to have.
Sure. We've been talking about this deeper time and deeper discussions with your family. And this might not be necessarily an example of that, but there are so many great examples of pop culture that tackle the road trip. And this is a scene from season 7 episode of The Simpsons. And the family is embarking on a road trip. Let's take a listen.
yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Where are we going?
We're going to Storytown Village, Grandpa. It's an amusement park for babies.
Oh, just leave me in the car with the window open a crack.
That's the plan.
What do you think, Rich?
Fantastic.
Did you end up leaving your dad in the car with the window cracked ever?
No, but I almost got left behind several times, I can tell you that.
Oh,
I
yeah?
mean, my dad would time us for making potty stops at like a McDonald's. And if we didn't make it back to the car, he wasn't shy about just, you know, continuing on. And sometimes he would just go around the block just to send the message. But my dad would literally time us, time our performances when we were dropped off to go take care of business so that we were sure to get back to the car so he could continue what he called making time on the way to the next destination.
Mm.
And, you know, it didn't matter where we were headed or why we were headed there. He just wanted to get there in whatever, you know, inhumanly fast possible, you know, time possible. it was just his way.
He would have been a big fan of the Hyperloop maybe when it comes out, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit, you know, I just want to touch on this one more time about the future of road trips. Now, you talked about electronic devices, and of course, there's a big debate around that. But I noticed this detail that there's a van life movement on Instagram that has inspired a lot of people to sell everything and take to the road. Did you find evidence of that on your work on the book?
Well, I mean, I certainly took plenty of my own road trips with my own family as kind of inspiration for writing the book. But I didn't actually do much of my writing on the road. I just, you know, I'm the kind of writer that I need to be in a completely quiet environment, and I wasn't going to get that while out on the road with two kids.
And, fair enough.
And, you know, trying to make our way to a destination. So I can certainly understand the movement. I can understand the allure of being out on the road and collecting these experiences and writing about them, but it wasn't something that I did in the process of writing this book.
Do you think that there may be a golden age coming up with, you know, self-driving vehicles potentially?
I hope so. I hope so. And, it's my deep hope that as long as we are rediscovering some of the practical benefits of road travel, being able to stop, you know, when you want to, leave when you want to, that we also get back to that idea of the road trip as a shared experience. And we put away some of those electronic devices and we make
sure.
The effort to stop at places along the way and truly share those experiences together with our travel companions.
Well, that's a good note to end on. Rich Rattè, author of the new book, Don't Make Me Pull Over, An Informal History of the Family Road Trip. Rich, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Ben.
I'm Ben Brock Johnson. This is On Point.